1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You're kind of in and out. Just make sure you're connected.
Pull it off and blow in the connectors. Turn this off. Turn off the television. It's like a Nintendo cartridge. You got to blow in it.
And you learned this from where?
Huh?
Where'd you learn this from?
I'm a professional broadcaster, so this is just it's trick or trick. Yeah.
When my fucking mic stops working, we'll see how professional shit is. Before we get started,
sure.
Why don't you guys talk about the trailers?
What were the trailers?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy, which looks looks phenomenal.
Ghost in the Shell.
It looks all right.
Ghost in the Shell looks awesome.
Yeah, actually, that's what I think the new Harrison Ford movie.
Blade Runner?
Yeah, Blade Runner.
I think that's what the Blade Runner should look like.
A lot of that stuff came from Blade Runner.
Yeah.
You know, all that cyberpunk stuff was William Gibson and Blade Runner. And you know, Ghost in the Shell was when in the 90s? Like the mid-90s?
I think so.
How far ahead was the manga versus the anime? Because it started as a manga and then it became an anime, or was it the other way around?
And then when did the hentai come around?
I think it was anime first. It was part of that renaisance when Akira...
It was a few years after Akira.
Yeah, because Akira was
late 80s, that's right?
Gundam.
I mean, I saw Akira when it was all in Japanese. With American writing on the bottom, like they were writing a dialogue.
Back when you're getting like dubs on VHS,
you'd have to go up to the college.
The otaku would have it.
Well, the college students who were taking Japanese would have the bootlegs, and some of them would actually like dub it themselves. So it'd be like, Chip, what are you doing? You should really stop, because they were trying to.
Right, they're trying to learn Japanese through.
They were dubbing Japanese anime with American voices. They could understand what the characters were speaking of, and then they would sell you these VHS tapes.
You're saying is their performances of what they
were very wooden.
Okay, but are you sure that they were successful translations too? They may have missed a lot of nuance. Given that they were students and all.
He didn't double check their grades, asshole.
Well, you got to remember.
He would have seen the official versions versus the version.
Yeah, and then he played them side by side.
This is the time where, like, if you were going to buy a VHS copy of Akira, it was like $70. I mean, they were ridiculously expensive.
Well, that was what everything cost then, unless it was like at Walmart, you know, or Kmart or something.
I remember buying Fire and Ice and Wizards for like dirt cheap at the Kroger bin.
But that was because they had movies that weren't terribly successful. Yeah. You know, those movies weren't huge success or anything. And I think the Bakshi owned them, or at least there were some rights, you know, weird rights issues with those movies anyway. So those type of movies and stuff that was in the public domain, that would go in and you could actually afford that. You could pay, you know, $10 to $20 and get one of those cassettes. But everything else, especially new, would be $80 to $100 for a VHS cassette. Because they're all priced for rental. So the rental store was supposed to buy them and then rent them to you.
Because I remember when the first time I saw it, my uncle had bought it, and we watched me, him, and like two of my cousins, and I was just blown away how beautiful the animation was.
On Akira.
Oh, yeah.
It's even to this day, it's stunning.
I haven't seen it in freaking forever. I don't think I've ever even seen it in its entirety.
I wasn't into it. Just like I tried really hard to get into what we called Japanimation back then.
Oh, my God. It was. We called it Japanimation.
Yeah. Very little of it actually took. I appreciated the visuals. I thought it had really striking visuals, but I understand they weren't compacting like a 28 volume story, because the epics were like 48 page square bounds, and I think they went to like 30 some odd issues of that, and all of that was supposed to be adapted into one 90 minute 2 hour movie.
And a lot of times what happens too is, like you said earlier, a lot of stuff gets lost in translation, because I've seen one version dubbed where it was the version I remember, and then I saw another version redubbed and even parts of it sequenced correctly, because apparently for the American version, they cut sequences. They moved them around a little bit.
Yeah.
And it made more sense, and the story had more gravitas to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the original Japanese or the American version?
The Japanese version with American dialogue.
Okay, like, yeah.
You could have it either in Japanese or in English. I just heard in English, which the voices were very similar still, but the story was way different.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it way more.
Well, you have a lot of, especially in the early days, you had a lot of journeymen and amateurs who were just adapting the stuff, doing like very literal translations, even though it didn't make sense.
Oh, yeah,
and then they also got... Yeah, and then they also got professional American writers.
All your bases belong to us.
You are on the way for this version.
What do you say?
You have no chance to survive, made your time.
They would get professional American writers to figure out the nuance or to culturate it to something that we would understand, to put it in a context that we would understand. Yeah, and you've seen the movie Ghost in the Shell.
That was a long time ago.
I've never seen it either.
We're bad nerds. Well, no, I've saw
we're
that.
Not otaku.
I think I saw the... didn't they do a sequel to it, too?
Yeah.
Or like an animated sequel.
I think it was Ghost in the Shells. Or was it Ghosts in the Shell?
I don't remember.
It was a joke. Like aliens.
It was one of those late trailers. Like I think it came out like we not the trailers, late sequels that came out like 10 years after the fact. So
I don't even think I own it.
Like Trainspotting,
I have to rent it or something. Check it out. I actually want to see that Trainspotting.
Yeah, I mean, the comparison I make is between Clerks and Clerks Two, which I know is probably a little bit weird. I saw Clerks because everybody would talk about Clerks, and I think I saw it probably after Mallrats because Mac here and his brother, especially his brother,
we've talked about this on the podcast. We talked that one up a lot.
I wasn't into it. Then I caught Clerks on video, and I wasn't really super into that. And then for some reason, years later, I think it was you, me, and Pussycat went and saw that one. And I really dug Clerks 2.
I was there too. I saw Clerks 2.
Because I'd never seen Clerks 1, but I saw Clerks 1. And I know a big deciding factor in my enjoyment was Rosario Dawson's bouncing breasts. But I also really liked seeing those guys and those dead end jobs 10 years later, and Kevin Smith sort of like memorializing the regular guy who just goes into his job daily and goes to the grind and tries to find the joy in that kind of work. And I'm hoping T2, as they're referring to it, which is unfortunate, I'm hoping that'll do the same thing, where we get to see what happens to these guys 20 years later.
Oh, no, absolutely. They hinted at that.
But give us something a little bit more profound than the sort of shit that Danny Boyle was coming up 20 years ago, because back then it was just like, let me do some cool heroin visuals, you know, let me do some cool acid trips and bad sex. This chick's actually underage and blah, blah, blah. I'm curious to see if they're going to be able to show who those guys became all those years later and do that in a way that feels believable and that is more that I can tune into emotionally in a way that I won't lie.
I'm excited to go see it
because people talked up Trainspotting so much. When I finally saw it, I was like, you know, just like I was with Clerks. This movie actually appeals to me more. It looks like it'll appeal to me more. So, and even back then, I think it probably would appeal to me more.
I rewatched Trainspotting because it's on Netflix right now.
Oh, yeah.
It held up for me. I enjoyed it. I knew those guys growing up. So, or versions of them.
Yeah.
So,
probably different accents.
Do you think mine?
But with Ghost in the Shell, I really enjoy Scarlett Johansson looking like she's naked while shooting guns.
I'm so glad I wasn't sitting next to another screen.
But it looks cool though, doesn't it? It's interesting.
No, actually, I thought that was the worst looking part of the trailer.
Was her running around?
Yeah. I actually like when they showed the geisha girl.
Yeah,
that was cool. Yeah,
those look cool.
Yeah,
her running around, I was kind of like,
well, and I think all the people.
Is this kind of Resident Evil?
But that is
Underworld. Yeah, she's jumping around.
It's got an underworld vibe too.
I'm a fan of one of those franchises though.
I'd like to go see the movie and then watch the cartoon and talk about it.
My problem though is I saw Lucy, and anime. Lucy was terrible.
Yeah,
Lucy was actually really bad.
I liked Lucy. I thought it was okay. I kind of liked that ending though.
The Matrix, but more stoner, more like pseudo profundity.
I like that fact where she's like, I'm evolving beyond. And then she's turning into a tree or...
I don't even remember the ending at this point.
I don't care. How about the Mummy trailer?
Well, hold on. Before we go too far, since we were talking Matrix, John Wick Part 2.
Oh, I'm going to go see that shit, dude. That looked fun.
I did like the first one.
You didn't?
I did not like the first one.
I liked the first one.
And I was shocked because...
So does he talk and act like that on purpose? Is that like the character?
Yeah.
Or is he really that like...
He's just like angry all the time, dude. He's just fucking like...
No, but he doesn't have some weird sign, kind of way that he talks because he talks like this in the trailer.
Have you not followed Keanu Reeves' entire career, but it's different than it. I think that's just the way that they edited it.
They cut the trailer.
He is more terse.
I'm gonna kill every one of them.
Whoever comes, I'll kill them. I'll kill them all.
Well, all I know is in the first one, he always has that very intense look every fucking minute of the movie.
Yeah. He's not very conversive. John Wick is not given tons of dialogue, so he doesn't talk.
John S. Preston Wick Squire.
But it almost feels like one of those what are the Frank Miller books?
Like a hard boiled kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like where the character doesn't speak, maybe two lines, and it's just kill.
There's a lot of internal monologue in Sin City though that isn't in this.
I don't know. movie adaptation. It was like no dialogue whatsoever.
Well, if you're talking about like Miho or something, yeah. But there was even a lot of internal monologue in the movies. You know, it was just turned into voiceover. But yeah, I didn't like the first John Wick. People have said that it's kind of comic booky. The thing that reminds me the most of is Boondock Saints, which is a movie that I used to like until all the Broheim really latched onto it. When it was something that nobody else had really heard of, and I was kind of discovering it, I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And then it got ruined for me because too many people like thought it was more than it was. And John Wick was no Boondock Saint. You know, it's just, to me, it feels like Neo
and Morpheus are meeting again.
Yeah.
You didn't get a little hard when you saw Morpheus.
Not after the last two Matrixes.
And he said, get him a gun?
Let me put it to you this way. I've yet to watch The Matrix 2 or 3 since those things came out. That's how little interest
I ever watched them. I watched the first one.
The first one's all you need to see.
At the end, whenever he flies off, I'm like, oh, the movie's over.
That's the end of it.
And they play Wake Up.
Well, I remember when we walked out of The Matrix, because you and your brother and I, we saw that together. Mm-hmm. And
at Hollywood.
And I think I remember saying, well, he flies to the end. There's really no place to go from there. And I was fucking right.
And then you saw the sequel with me and Pussycat, because remember, there was people dressed like that?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, gonna shoot the theater, because they fucking...
Definitely, stop whispering. You move away when you whisper. It's very strange. You should move away when you yell.
Bad things happen when people show up all in black in a theater in the middle of the night. Didn't they even almost not let them in? Like, they held them up at the door for a little bit.
One of them had a suitcase.
One of them had a suitcase or something.
This is a rabbit hole I don't want to go down.
Oh, you mean, yeah. It's probably for the best, yeah.
Can we talk about the fucking mummy already?
We'll get there. But John Wick reminds me too much of
still on John Wick.
I was expecting him to go,
we're back to Ghost in the Shell. Now, the end of Lucy. Wait, remember when we first showed up
and we sat down?
So back to Trainspotting 2. The reason I didn't like the end of Lucy.
John Wick Dunn is thunder. You're not going to see it. I'm going to go see it.
It's too much of a video game movie. The first one, all the dialogue was like cutscenes, you know, for the entire feature length movie, though. So I just couldn't get into it. I wanted to. I mean, I tried to get you guys to go see John Wick. You guys both flatly refused to go see it. I was really interested. And then when I finally see it, I was like, I'm glad I didn't wait.
I'll see it, then you and I can go see the sequel. I haven't seen the original.
Okay. That was a DVD movie for me for day one. So I already knew I wasn't going to go to the theaters to go watch it.
Yeah.
So I saw it on DVD and I was like, impressive.
Okay. So how about that mummy?
So wait, is the next step with John Wick the John Wick Jack Reacher combo movie where they're like partners or some shit?
No, but there's supposed to be a third John Wick. It's supposed to be a trilogy.
I know, but isn't Jack Reacher the same shit, but it's Tom Cruise?
Is Jack reaching John's Wick?
Dude, y'all are falling flat tonight, man. What's going on? So the mummy, what you think, Mac?
Hey guys, is that the mummy or the Suicide Squad 2?
And he's back. Yeah.
Because that girl looks like the...
Oh, no, absolutely.
Villain from Suicide Squad.
It wasn't the same actress, right?
No, that was the actress
they
who
do look
the...
even similar.
I thought it was. I was like...
What, Enchantress you're talking about, right? Cara Delevingne?
Yeah. I thought she was being... was a typecast already. Like, okay, we need a witch.
She is kind of typecast because, as far as I know, she's a Latina. And the other part that she's known for is playing the white chick from Star Trek Beyond. She was the white alien chick from the last... that we saw together, yeah.
The girl in Mummy.
Yeah, that's the same chick. So it's a Latina who constantly performs in whiteface.
I'm offended.
Whitewashed.
By the way, just real quick too, let's just talk about Star Trek Beyond very briefly, because you and I saw that and I barely even remember that movie.
I don't remember it.
Yeah.
I remember they played a Beastie Boy song.
Yeah, they did, and then, which is unfortunate too. Beastie Boys do not belong in a Star Trek movie.
That's the only thing I actually remember from that movie. I don't even remember the villain or what the point of the story was.
Oh, fuck. What was the villain? Oh, yeah. Idris Elba. The alien Idris Elba. Yeah. But spoiler, Idris Elba is the evil alien dude.
Don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my least favorite. Dude, the only good one is Darkness. Khan, I love that one. I own it. It's my favorite one. I don't watch the first one again, and I won't watch the third one ever again.
I like Carl Urban as McCoy. I think he does a pretty good impersonation of DeForest Kelly.
I like Spock.
I'm more of a Trekkie. I think we all are, but
we haven't done
any Star Trek episodes, really, because these are the kind of Star Trek movies that are made right now.
Give me those Star Treks.
But that chick's also in The Mummy. Did you already say everything you had to say about The Mummy?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. What do you guys think about the Universal shared universe concept where they're trying to do like the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Isn't
the universe
like everyone's monsters. Trying to do
everybody's
that
trying to do that because they're going to do it with Kong and Godzilla,
which makes sense.
They're trying to do it. Well, they already did it with Aliens Predators. There's a lot of predecessors, and in fact, the argument
but they didn't do it as well. Where Marvel has like there's this outreaching with what Cap, Thor, Iron Man, then you have Guardians, Black Panther sounds like it's going to be fucking phenomenal.
Oh my god, it's going to be awesome.
Spider-Man.
Before
Ant-Man. We can, we're going to have to cover Black Panther, but before we can do that, we're going to have to like do a deep deep dive on Black Panther comics, like fucking like the entire Don McGregor run at least, because I was looking at they finally announced the synopsis for the Black Panther movie and the full cast with the roles they've been cast, all that shit, or all that shit is from either the Don McGregor run or the Christopher Priest run, and like every single one of those names, Middle America is going to be like, what? What's with all these apostrophes? And I recognize the names, but it's from those runs. So that you're talking about, you know, Chris Priest did what, 4 or 5 years on Black Panther. Don McGregor did several years worth of them, and we got to read all that shit. So we're gonna have to really make an effort to get into Black Panther between now and 2018.
Well, I've never seen you so excited.
Is that on Marvel Unlimited or not?
I'm not sure. I think the Priest run is
most of, not all of it.
Yeah, but I don't know about the McGregor stuff.
Well, I own most of the Christopher Priest.
I've got the essentials, so I can. And I honestly, fact, I've got most of the original issues too. So if it came down to it, I could probably loan one of you guys the
essentials. It's essential. The McGregors.
Well, actually, the Priest stuff to me was the best. I remember you got me onto that.
Yeah, but the McGregor stuff lays the foundation for that, and it seems like a lot of the characters are going to be in the new movie, including the main villain.
Is it going to still have that same kind of quirky humor? With Ross?
New quirky. Well, no, you mean the movie?
Yeah,
I hope so. Yeah, because they already introduced Ross in Civil War,
but he was kind of a badass in that one.
You thought he was a badass?
He's a Fed.
He's a wannabe badass.
Well, he's a Fed.
Yeah.
No, they made him look like they didn't make him be a
super competent or anything.
Yeah.
It seemed to me like in Civil War, since they don't have the rights to Peter, or maybe they have to share the rights to Henry Peter Gyrick, since I know the X movies have used him already. Mm-hmm. I thought that they were kind of trying to turn Martin Freeman into Gyrick more than they were turning him into Pete.
Well, no, but I think what it is when he's over here, he's a badass. Once you take him to Wakanda, he's out of water. He has that's where he was kind of fun, when he was in Wakanda in the books, if I remember correctly.
It's just funny to me, though, because you look at the cast, that's like one little white dot. Oh, yeah. One little white dot.
I think that's pretty badass.
It's awesome. It's awesome. And they've got some, the talent, the number of like name brand known actors in this movie far surpasses Morgan any Freeman's other Marvel. Right? He's the only one.
Okay. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they didn't go. They had no Sam Jackson that I know of that they've announced. And no Morgan Freeman.
That's the stinger.
Oh, there's your stinger. Yeah. But yeah, no, that's, I'm really looking forward to that. But we got way the fuck off topic. How the heck did we get to Black Panther? Dude. No, somebody brought up Black Panther.
We were just talking about the Marvel universe. Right. Yeah. Compared to the universe of Universal.
Godzilla and King Kong are doing theirs, but they're only doing two movies.
Yeah.
Alien Predator did their movies.
Yeah, Freddy versus Jason, they were always just twofers. Not the scope and not the level of quality. But Universal actually did have a shared universe back in the 40s, you know? If for no other reason than...
Monsters going to fight each other? Is it going to be another monster squad? Or
I think that the whole point of this Mummy movie is to set up Tom Cruise as a hero to be part of that universe. So I imagine they're going to
He's
going to
have superpowers, right? Because it looks like...
They've already established that, yeah. Yeah,
I didn't imagine that
he survives the plane crash or whatever.
You don't end up in a body bag while you're still breathing.
When they showed that bus and he's like somehow bouncing through the middle of it.
Okay.
I was like, oh, okay, that's not very.
Well, he obviously has some sort of immortality.
Yeah, okay.
That was bequeathed by the mummy and blah blah blah.
So he's probably gonna be the male mummy.
By the female mummy, yeah.
Because they said
bequeathed on.
They said the Dracula film that came out a few years ago, it's part of the universe now.
No. That when it first came out, it was supposed to be the start of the Universal Monsters shared universe. And then when it did, it went, speaking of queefs.
Come on, man. You're above that.
Not much. Well, it depends on where you're positioning.
Stop. I know you're going this. Stop it.
Because it did so poorly, they just disowned it and decided to do Mulligan. Mummy Mulligan is what this is going to be. Okay. So they're going to start with the mummy now.
Oh, because I thought.
Wait. Was Godzilla the same way then? Because Godzilla was supposed to kick off.
No.
Godzilla did it. It hit, and that's why they're making Kong. And then the next one after that is Kong and Godzilla.
Yeah.
But that's going to be tied into the Bryan Cranston that he was in.
Yeah. They're maintaining. But I don't think that was conceived to be part of a shared universe.
I thought that it was, because we talked about it.
Did it?
We talked about it when it happened.
Okay.
Because me and Fraho were talking about it. Because what I've seen of Kong, it looks like it's taking place in the 70s, where Godzilla took place present time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how they're going to make that work.
Probably because at the end of Kong, they knock him into some hibernation, and then he wakes up probably to fight Godzilla.
But why have it set in the past in the first place? You know, then you don't have to worry about that. See, those kind of contrivances are understandable in comics. You have to have Cap be in World War II. They've done movies where he wasn't in World War II, and it was stupid. So because of how that's set up in the comics, you have to do that. But with King Kong, there's no reason he has to come from the 1930s. 30s.
Yeah.
And especially if they're not going to connect to the Peter Jackson movie. So just have it be today. Hopefully it'll just be today because there's no sense in it. But my understanding is part if they did do it in the past, it's because this is supposed to be a prequel that takes place before the continuity of the original movie. So
I got you. Because it looks fantastic. I thought the comic. But that's,
I don't know if I'm going to see that theatrically.
Oh, I'll see it with you. I think it looks good.
Well, I was already burned with Godzilla. So you guys go see it and let me know how it works out for you. But we didn't super enjoy Godzilla. You know,
Godzilla was terrible.
Yeah. I think I liked it better than you did.
You liked it better than me. I thought it was offensively terrible.
So I liked it okay.
We're not talking about it.
Okay. Which one?
Get to the fucking movie.
Hold on.
Wait, was there any more trailers after?
Who fucking cares?
Well, Guardians.
Well, I want to talk about the mummy, though. So what kills me with this mummy thing,
though. So what kills me with Ghost in the Shell is, back to Ghost in the Shell.
I understand they're trying to do a shared universe, and I understand they're trying to do something similar to what Marvel and Warner Brothers DC Extended Universe, whatever it's called, are doing. But they're monsters. And I think that you're not going to serve yourself by trying to make superhero slash action movies out of the Universal monsters. I think you need to do something that's more horror flavored, and this just looks like an action movie. And I wish that instead of getting action movie directors for the Universal monsters, they would get up and coming horror directors, guys who are known for doing cool, scary stuff, like Michael Dougherty, Jennifer Kent, David Robert Mitchell, Drew Goddard, or Fed Alvarez would be somebody who'd be great to do something like that.
Rob Zombie, your favorite.
Not my favorite by far. What are you talking about, Rob Zombie? I don't like any Rob Zombie movies.
That's the joke.
Get on with the movie, man. I'm done with the trip.
Like, we couldn't do Rob Zombie, a mummy movie would be freaking great.
He'd be like, yeah. We're going all the way back.
God damn you. God damn you two.
I've been a zombie fan for most of my life. For most of my life, I've been a zombie movie fan, but I hadn't played video games.
I told you there are YouTube videos where they do a supercut of every time he says yeah on an album. So you can look like Astro Creep, and you can go to all of their albums where they just cut where he says yeah, and they're all like 5 minutes long per album. You're going, yeah.
I won't put that in my ringer.
That was Blomkamp. I don't think he's currently actively attached to the Alien sequel.
You think so?
Yeah, no.
But didn't he say he was on coming into one of the movies?
That was before Blomkamp was off. Oh. When he was in Houston saying that he was going to be in it, that was when Blomkamp was still going to direct it. Now it's like on hold.
Script.
They're going to do like the two Ripley Scott movies and then worry about whether or not they're going to do it with Blomkamp. No, actually, you know what?
Rip.
Sigourney Weaver mentioned that too, though, because she said she's got to finish the Avatars first. We're talking in the 2020s before that's a concern. A fifth Alien movie, so.
Thank God, Sigourney Weaver, so I guess.
Yeah, good for her, right? Not exactly good gaming odds on that.
Yeah, that was from the Star Wars episode, right? Trump.
Was that one of the songs you sampled in there?
Yeah, we kept doing New Order versus...
Oh, I remember. Yeah. Everyone I talked to thoroughly enjoyed. We had some new comments on that one. I think on our Facebook page, we got a few comments on that one.
So I thought the first thing we'd do, since it's been almost a year since we did anything under the Old Supply brand, is like answer our fucking mail from a year ago. So David Fiore had mentioned that we'd correctly guessed that he was Canadian as Charged, a Montrealer now in Toronto, both west of Siskoid. He mentioned that Tusk, both the song and album, were amazing. And because you demanded it, he mentioned a number of tracks that I think we'll listen to and see how we feel about.
Okay.
The first one is New Kingdoms, Paradise Don't Come Cheap. Said the whole album is perfect. We're not going to listen to the whole album, but let's like select a track or something. Do we have thoughts?
First of all, it was not what I was expecting, but I don't remember what the context of that. Yeah. It sounds like a cross between House of Pain and Cypress Hill.
Mm-hmm. Do you like it?
I have to listen to more, but I mean, I'm a 90s hip-hop guy, so...
It sounded like it was more in your wheelhouse.
Sounds like Ill Communication, Beastie Boys Ill Communication era hip-hop, which is Cypress Hill, House of Pain, with some Wu-Tang in there.
Fix it?
Yeah, it's okay.
The next one's going to be The Gits, Another Shot of Whiskey.
Don't know why we compromise ourselves, I thought it was a common understanding. With all I've tried to help with, they tell me why. So end up at the end, not a couple of people I'm saving at the bar, and maybe I'm getting some rest.
Okay, so the first thing I was going to ask was that a dude or a chick? And it was a chick. And she kind of sounded like if Stevie Nicks rocked a little harder. I definitely dug it regardless. Fiore also mentions that The Gits has probably the most affecting rock documentary I've ever seen. I tried to find it online. I couldn't find it for free, but maybe we can hunt around for it later on. You just played the trailer for it, though.
It's kind of a miracle to meet someone like that in this life.
I'm so lucky to have seen it.
Neo was doing something that was unique in 1993, and it's unique today.
27-year-old Mia Zapata was a singer on the brink of making it big, but it's all over now. Zapata's body was found early Wednesday morning on a remote street in the center of the
city. Yeah, it looks very interesting. Track.
Yeah. Damn. And so what was the background that you caught on her? The singer's name was Mia Zapata?
Yeah, basically she was murdered during the production of her second album. Just on the cusp, I think that was like 93, on the cusp of grunge going freaking nuclear.
Yeah, I'd like to watch that documentary though. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what would y'all think of the song?
I think it sounded good. I think it sounded a mix between Stevie Nicks and Courtney Love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sounded like what we all know is Seattle grunge to me. Mm-hmm. So I don't see any reason why they couldn't have been as popular as anybody else coming out of that.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I mean, I've heard of the Gits, but I never really listened to them before. I had no real familiarity besides.
I wouldn't mind hearing more. Good stuff.
Well, especially, I mean, if there's only two albums, it'd be pretty easy to investigate that. Our next clip is Bikini Kill's Carnival. Little known fact, Illegal Machine was a carny. How'd that work out for you? Besides the small fingers and smelling like cabbage.
Fred, I didn't see that CD underbelly. Like I really missed out now.
You just had the underage girls working the booths and shit.
Correct.
Sorry. No fun there.
Okay.
So you didn't ever get to do like any of that shit like we saw in Full Moon Junction where Sherilyn Finn shows up and...
No, we weren't nomadic carnies. It was a fixed position. I think it's more the nomadic carnies to go through that kind of shit.
So, Bikini Kill.
I thought it was fine. I wouldn't mind hearing more of that.
For DC Bloodlines, I do what I call undercurrent music where it's just like songs in the background to kind of change the flow up a little bit. And I try to have the music match the character I'm talking about. And I did an episode about Anima, who was a riot girl chick, so I gave myself a crash course. As much of a bitch-caked feminist as you guys make me out to be, I never actually listened to any serious riot girl stuff, and I think if I remember correctly, Bikini Kill was one of the acts I liked the best, and they had quite a few solid songs. It helps when they're a minute and a half long, too. You know, you're not going to necessarily get tired of it in that time span, but they had some pretty good stuff, so yeah, I'm listening to more of their stuff. Anything fix it?
Nah, I'm more forgiving on it. I remember hearing about this band, though. I don't know where, but I remember hearing the name.
So the next one is just called Demirep. Demirep. I don't have any songs listed or anything. I've got a YouTube address, but...
This is Demirep Bikini Hills, what comes up.
Oh, it's the same band with a different song. Okay.
Miss Mary Mac, all dressed in black with silver buttons all down her back.
This one, 2 minutes, 28 seconds long.
Bite size.
That's good.
The Red Ants Freakathon. And that's actually the last one, too. The Red Ants is spelled like the relative, not like the insect or arachnid or whatever it is. I forget. What is an ant?
What is
an
what?
What is an ant?
An ant is an insect.
It's just not like an arachnid or anything like that. It's not part of some overarching family. An ant is an ant is an ant. But these are red ants like...
Freakathon?
This one begins and ends with an impromptu patty cake gang that sounds, you know, like it's not really intended to be part of the song. And then it's a punk song that kind of sounds like Tanya Donnelly fronting Babes in Toyland.
Who's that?
Tanya Donnelly is the chick from Belly.
And what's that?
You know Babes in Toyland?
Yeah.
Like Bruce Violet?
No, but what?
Okay,
no. You're going shit control, man. Radical, I don't know anything about.
It seems appropriate, though, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why the fuck have you not heard of them and listened to them more? Because this sounds really up your fucking wheel, in your wheelhouse from the 90s, bro.
Okay, yeah, it just...
Like, I don't know how this isn't on a fucking Suzanne Vega Veruca song.
But do you have any idea of how far apart Suzanne Vega is from Veruca Salt?
I don't know how many Juliana Hetfield, Veruca Salt, Bikini Kill mixtapes you didn't make that you should have, but I don't know. get it.
So how about them red ants? Okay, so just to clarify, Red Ants is pop-skewing punk. Suzanne Vega, for most of her career, is folk. Brook Assault is poppy alt-rock. They're not the same at all.
Let me tell you something.
Chicks with guitars. Everybody loves chicks with guitars, but otherwise, no.
As soon as you started playing this, I was transported back to the comic shop, and you're fucking jamming Red Ants, even though you never did, but you should have been, while you're making microwave weenie sandwiches, like mayonnaise and white bread, and you're popping them in the microwave, and they're running to the other side of the shop, so you don't get testicular cancer. Because a guy you worked with died of testicular cancer, or got testicular cancer, and he always was crotchety with a microwave. And I didn't know that. So.
I made more of a joke of it than it was. It was funny because my partner in the shop, we'd be hanging out, all of a sudden I just run across the shop to get away from the microwave, yeah. So my nuts didn't get roasted. But I still didn't want to be near the microwave, especially at crotch level, directly in line with my voice.
He didn't want to toast his weenie while he was toasting his weenie.
If anything, wouldn't that have helped you out with the no kids concept?
Potentially, but the whole no life part of it was kind of a downer too.
Poor man's vasectomy.
I didn't want a third lump down there, so.
But anyway, so I can totally see you jamming Red Ants, and somebody comes in and goes, "Hey, what's this shitty music?" You're like, "Red Ants, man! I'll burn you a disc. I got a bunch of it off Napster or LiveWire or something."
Honestly, I had that same image in my head.
Oh, yeah.
I almost was surprised you never played this. Where did he ever push those shitty CDs on you? Where
absolutely,
you
should try this. I've still got
here this
somewhere.
You gotta hear this. It's pretty good. And you play it once and wonder why, oh why?
Yeah. Every now and then there's some good stuff on the card.
I don't know. You gave me some Flying Tigers or
oh, you didn't like Ghost Army?
No, it wasn't Ghost of Army. Something else, wasn't it? You gave me something. The title was Tiger or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the that kind of rockabilly. So, yeah, it was good stuff. You don't like Ghost Army?
Yeah. And he always named it something.
Yeah, I always named it something random. Yes.
Yeah. So that's. I don't know why Red Ants.
I hadn't heard of them.
Why did Red Ants and Bikini Kill not make any of those?
Because
I feel like we missed out.
Because the dude who had even more esoteric taste than me never hooked me up with any Red Ant. That one dude that works at one of the local comic shops now? The guy who was like the dude in High Fidelity, where you both were Jack Black in High Fidelity and I'm John Cusack? Yes, that
anyway,
one.
So without ever listening to Bikini Kill, background hurts me. I feel like I've heard Bikini Kill.
That name sounds very familiar to me.
Yeah, definitely, me too. I heard of them. Red Ants, I'd not heard of, no.
Who were the other, who were the ones on the Grand Royale?
Luscious Jackson.
Luscious Jackson.
You know I'm a big Luscious Jackson fan.
I don't understand how on your Luscious Jackson.
Well, Luscious Jackson was Julie, funk, though.
I don't understand how your Luscious Jackson.
How do you
Juliana Hatfield. I got a question. Suzanne Vega.
Do you listen to any metal?
Yeah, mostly shit than you guys.
Metal.
I don't even want to talk about this. You're making me fucking curious.
I just want to see what Frank thinks is metal. That's all.
No, I don't even want to talk about it. But it should have been on there with fucking Suzanne Vega and fucking the Cardigans. And
the Cardigans were more of a lounge sound for the most part with some techno. Electronica, I should
say. The theme of the CD. Where it's got fucking 99.9 Fahrenheit degrees and fucking Red Ants Freakathon and then Bikini Kills, whatever that other song was, and I just feel it makes me feel nostalgic for our early years. And it's just bizarre to me that you missed this pop, because it's not like these are some obscure Canadian bands.
I don't know about the Red Ants. They might be.
I doubt it.
Were the Gits Canadian?
No.
Okay.
No, I
were they Seattle?
I thought they were Seattle.
Okay. Yes. Maybe. I don't know. We didn't get to watch the documentary, so
she was wearing Louisville t-shirts, so she was definitely American.
Maybe she's wearing them ironically.
No, I don't think so.
So, thanks to David Fior for sending us down this particular rabbit hole.
That was bad. I didn't mind any of that.
So before I forget to cover this section, we got Google Plus One from Keith G. Baker on Rolled Spine 3 and 4. And Hammer Strikes Plus One, our episodes devoted to Jim, The Force Awakens, The Hateful Eight, and the free-roaming Rolled Spine 3. As far as people who enjoyed our last episode, hashtag truly outrageous, were Adam Blackmoon, Ange, Art of Selfie, Charlton Hero, Coffee and Comics Blog, Comic Reflections, Darren Ruth Sutherland, David Fior, David Golding Artist, David Gutierrez, Dead as Hell, Dead Vinyl, Dr. G Nerdologist, Fire Source, Keith G. Baker, Legiticus, Luke Dobwalker, Marvel Incorporated 2099, Michael Wagner, Odyssey Unleashed Podcast, The Phantom at Kit the Phantom, Siskoid, Steven Scarlotta, the producer of the Jodorowsky's Dune, and NYHC, co-writer of Beyond the Gates and Final Girl, Cyanide the Scarecrow, and Trekker Talk. I have some reference to Point Break here. I don't know why I did that. Do we have anything to say about Point Break?
The movie? We were probably making fun of the trailer.
For yeah,
the
movie. That might have been it.
The new one? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say the original one. I fucking love the movie.
Yeah, yeah, but did we see...
These are comments made podcasts we put out over a year ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there are people here who like are referencing podcasts that don't exist anymore. People who no longer go by these aliases. People that stopped listening to us. It's a whole fucking mixed bag of weird-ass shit that doesn't roll in anymore.
We got some comments on the re-release, too.
Oh, did we? I didn't even touch on all that stuff yet. Was it on the Facebook page?
No.
You realize, I don't think we even had a Facebook page at the time we did this. Well, then unless you want to bring it up on your phone.
Hold on, let me look real quick.
Was it on the Twitter?
I don't think it was on the Twitter.
Yeah.
I keep up with the Twitter. I don't.
It was.
Not lately, though. The last, like, over the holiday, I haven't bothered with it.
Didn't we just release?
No. Well, re-released on
the hits. We're already there.
But no, the merging of the streams as the
Kyle Benning said.
What did Kyle?
Oh, do you remember Kyle Benning saying something?
He said no mud honey or screaming tees include
trees.
Some of Lane's best stuff came off the supergroup Mad Season when he was in and out of rehab. Which one of my favorite Mad Season song is River of the Sea. A fantastic.
Down rolls down.
Alice in Chains is the best of that era. Pearl Jam is my second favorite. Deeper cuts on their later albums are pretty great.
I thought we made a reference at some point to I Nearly Lost You There in one of these shows. Am I wrong?
I thought so too, because I like Screaming
Trees. Yeah.
And that's the only good song I remember.
Dun, dun, dun. That's the only Screaming Trees song I know too. What was the other one besides? I've definitely heard the name Mud Honey, but it was a little like before the Seattle thing really blew up. Touch me!
What was the band that they were all in at one time?
Oh, yeah. Temple of the Dog. No, you know what? That might be what it is. Wasn't Mudhoney the group where the lead singer died and then they formed Temple of the Dog out of the band?
Yeah.
Plus Chris Cornell and fucking so. Pearl Jam guy. What's his name? Help me out. The Pearl Jam guy.
Eddie Vedder.
Thank you.
The fate of a band called Mother Love Bone is the reason why music today is what it is. The actions of Mother Love Bone and their lead singer Andrew Wood single-handedly changed the course of music history. What these guys did in the late 80s and the very early 90s, that's the reason why what you hear on the radio is there.
I had a brain fart. What can I just say? I got like 4 hours sleep last night. Give me a break.
That's more than enough for you. Keep on taking fine.
And I have my rebranded Pepsi Zero.
Correctly done.
Mud Honey.
Was it Mud Honey? I couldn't. Was it Mud Honey?
I want to say it was Mud Honey.
Love
yeah.
Jones.
No, you were right. It was Mother Love Bone. So what the fuck was Mud Honey? I know the name. I can't connect the song to it, though. But it was Meat Puppets that Kurt Cobain did all those covers Unplugged. Okay. Go to the discography.
Oh wow! Just a lot of information here.
Were they active for a long time?
89 to 2013.
That's probably a fairly long time. Yeah.
Members cycling in and out. Associated acts: Nirvana, Green River, The Melvins, Mr. F, and The Calculations. Just tons of stuff here, guys.
Okay, so we're gonna have to investigate Mudhoney. Do we want to just like throw out a random search for Mudhoney and see what comes up?
Nope.
Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Well, I'm just glad that Kyle Benning forgive you for calling him a Satanist that time.
Did he forgive?
He commented. I wasn't sure. I thought he might have been like terribly offended.
We did well.
No, you. Not only did you call him a Satanist. Yeah, exactly. But not only did he call out Satanists in our listenership, but he was like the first name he drew up too.
Yeah, and it was really quick. I was quick to say Kyle Benning.
Just remember, if he floats, he's a witch. Oh yeah, I don't think I mentioned that. Comic Reflections gave us a Follow Friday. Adam Blackmoon gave us Monday Madness and Team Thursday. Odyssey Unleashed podcast, which again no longer exists. And when I finally did limited episode featuring Curtis the Shadow that I sat on for 2 years. I never got any kind of replies, so it just went into a black hole of does not give a shit about podcasts no more. He wrote, I'm way behind on listening, but anything Frank, Mac, and Fixit are involved in, I'm listening, just may not be able to comment for 2 years. And then Ryan Count Druncula Daily, which he really doesn't even go by anymore, replied on episode 3 that Chris Cornell's song from Casino Royale was called, ironically perhaps in this case, You Know My Name. No, we don't. I love the song. I'm not sure how well it fit as a Bond theme, but I liked it. I tend to associate Bond themes with female singers, Carly Simon, Tina Turner, Adele, which I agree with. I like some the guy singers in the Bond songs, but I typically am going to be more favorably disposed toward the female singers.
The only one I always remember is Goldfinger.
He's the man with the Midas touch.
That one was almost kind of cartoonish.
It's definitely painting a picture of this villain for you, yeah. That's the only Bond theme you like, though? That comes off the top of your head?
Well,
I don't like any of them. I think
you don't like any of them, really?
I never got into
it. The one with
didn't you like Garbage?
Timothy Leary. No, not Timothy Leary. Timothy Dalton.
Garbage? Garbage is another band that would have been one of your mixed. That
absolutely would have been. I was a fan of Garbage, for sure.
Living Daylights.
Oh, Aha?
No. From the...
The song was by Aha from The Living Daylights. That's like the one nobody...
I thought that was Duran Duran.
No, that you're thinking of View to a Kill, which is a great fucking Bond song, by the way.
That one I've always liked. Plus, that's what
nobody ever remembers Aha's song from Living Daylights because it fucking sucked. It's really like possibly the worst Bond song ever made. In fact.
Which Bond movie was that part of?
That's The Living Daylights, the first Timothy Dalton movie.
I don't even remember.
I cannot name the song. I do not remember the rhythm. I don't remember what any of the lyrical content was.
Walken making an awesome villain.
Honestly, if you hadn't mentioned The Living Daylights just now, I would have not remembered to bring up that was probably the worst. It's actually probably worse than the Cornell song.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, but we hate the Cornell song, right?
Yeah.
You apparently hate all. How can you hate all Bond songs?
I don't get the fact.
Do you at least like the Bond theme?
Mac hates everything that exists. He's as close to a nihilist.
I don't see the. Oh, who's gonna do the? Let's get big name do a Bond song. I don't get it. You guys apparently are.
I like Bond songs.
Circle jerking over. That's great. That's fine.
You know we're going to have a Bond podcast, so I should probably bring it up. It'll probably be out before this one.
Aha version.
Oh no! Don't do that.
Living Daylights.
Fuck. Oh, it actually is called The Living Daylights. Like, see, that's how little I remembered.
I can't believe Aha did this.
Anything besides the one video that everybody knows.
Yeah.
No, it is automatically already better than Chris Cornell.
Oh
my gosh. I don't think it's...
This isn't that bad. It kind of sounds like Bauhaus's...
Really, it's just like some really bad chorus. But...
It needs to be black and white and animated. And I can be, I'm down with it. You know, I don't think I've ever seen this Bond movie either.
I've seen them. This wasn't that bad. I don't know. I was too harsh on that. I forgot this was decent.
I can say this sounds like just anything they would have put out.
Sounds very 80s.
They stayed in their wheelhouse.
Real quick, what was the the movie?
It sounds a little Duran Duran, but
it does sound kind of Duran Duran. Now that I'm listening to it again.
I'm gonna have to go watch this movie now.
Oh no, you really don't need to do that. It's not good.
The production is not bad on this either.
The video? No. They're doing a good job of interspersing imagery from the movie.
I don't even know what it took to.
So wait, did he come
in the 1987 to do this? Shit. Yeah, all the superpositions. Yeah.
No, wait a minute. Did this come after Roger Moore?
Yes,
because I stopped Roger Moore and I picked up again with Brosnan.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did that.
Okay, I've never seen any of this. None of his.
Yeah, I told you that one day when I was going to all the movie theaters with my father and I caught all these movies. I'm not 100% certain, but I think that Living Daylights was playing too. But I only caught little bits of it because I didn't care. I just couldn't get into it. I mean, I like Timothy Dalton. He's been great in a lot of stuff, but I just couldn't get into his Bond. And I don't think either of the movies he made was particularly good.
I just forgot that he was Bond in
it. Well, he only made 2 movies 25 years ago, so yeah. Because he only did The Living Daylights and License to Kill, and then he was out.
So who was it that killed Zorn?
That was the last of the Roger Moore movies. Christopher Walken.
Yeah, Christopher Walken. Okay. We'll have to do Bond
Top. You need to find some stupid ass top 10 Bond songs, and you guys watch it and then just talk about it. And also make sure you do that when I'm not around.
I actually, for the 50th anniversary on my little nerd side blog, I ranked every Bond theme up to that point. It was like 25 at the time.
See, I would have you make fun of me about it. Frank doesn't.
I made it top. Yeah, well, I should have done it as a video. It would have gotten 1 million hits. Yeah. But instead, it is in a blog when nobody gave a shit about blogs anymore.
My little blog.
I did like Olivia Dabo, though. She was pretty cute.
I've never seen these movies, dude. It's kind of weird.
People liked it at the time because they felt like it was a return to the what they always do with Bond. The first one is always, it's returning to the infinite roots. And the second movie, they go total fucking Roger Moore goofball, dumbass shit right for the entire rest of the series. With the exception of Daniel Craig. That's the only one where they didn't go into cartoon land like by the second one.
Well, he's more of a thug.
Yeah.
The fact that you ripped on this song so much and it's actually not bad.
Yeah, I feel bad now.
Seriously question your top 10 movies.
No. I hadn't listened to it. I misremembered. I'm walking back right now my comments. This was actually not a bad theme at all.
Compared to Chris Cornell?
Way better than Chris Cornell's. I was completely out of line. I apologize to AHA.
Wait, so dude, what if such a strange video?
I still don't give a shit about the movie. It's not, but it's better than License to Kill is terrible. But this one was okay. It was just kind of mediocre. But License to Kill is bad. Like, it's like a Steven Seagal movie in packaged in a Bond movie, and it's overly violent and vicious. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, now the song. I don't. Ooh, you know what? That was another one I think was probably pretty bad. I think it was Gladys Knight who did the License to Kill song. That's another one that's like in that lost time where it's like, wait, there were still Bond songs being done? Because Duran Duran had a huge hit with View to a Kill, and then like nobody talked about Bond songs again until Tina Turner. You to a Kill.
Yeah, that's a good song, good movie.
Dance into the Fire.
There you go. Because well, the only Bond movies that come pop in my head are Moonraker. How would you call it?
You to a Kill. We were singing the song. Yeah.
But I just always refer to it as Zorro because Chris Walken.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I was really hoping for a prank Chris Walken.
No, not right now.
It's really the only impersonation you do, and it's amazing.
No. Siskoid wrote on episode...
No. Do this next comment like you're
No, I'm not going to do it.
Siskoid? No. I can't even do it. I don't even do it.
No punctuation, remember. Can't do any punctuation.
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
No, it's excessive punctuation in all the wrong places. That's how you do it, first of all.
I always thought there was no punctuation at all.
It's kind of a fine line.
Remember, there would be a punctuation, you delete it, and then you just place it randomly throughout the rest of the sentence.
The emphasis...
I sound like Jerry Seinfeld.
Ready? And... No. Yeah. So Siskoid on episode 3 noted, I am not in Quebec. Them's fighting words. Even more easterly than that. I'm not one of those French Canadians. Yeah, okay. There's R&B here. So
we were contesting that
they had R&B in French Canadian areas.
I'm going to say on at least two other podcasts, is even as recent as our Son of Satan podcast, I have said that he's from Quebec.
Did you say... No, I don't think you did.
I think I called him a Quebecer.
I don't think you did that. I think I remember that part.
Well,
yeah.
Fuck. Hey, look, man.
We're doing it now. We're making up for not being completely ignorant about Canadian geography by calling him a Quebecer now.
Completely ignorant.
I'll own that.
I just thought that since he was French Canadian, he was Quebec.
Have you been to Canada? You've been to Canada. I'm the only one who hadn't been to Canada. So
I bet you did.
I didn't make it to Canada. We went to Niagara Falls, but we only stayed on the U.S. side. We never went across the border.
Well, that's the only time that I came to a border and they stopped us. So I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah, I don't imagine there's a ton of Mexicans in Canada, right?
No. And all they did was look at us and they're like, all right, keep going.
They were waving you guys in, though. It's like, no, you guys don't ever make it this far up.
I was never, like, when I go down to Mexico, go.
So they actually did stop you.
Yeah,
maybe it's because you look like you're from the Taliban, though.
They checked their car.
Did you have the fucking Taliban beard back then? Okay.
Hey, if you put Mr. Fix-It's facial hair together with my facial hair, we make one full beard. So I've got the mustache, and you do the mustache.
I don't think he wants your mustache, though. I don't think you should want your mustache. We should.
Creepy.
I'm breaking the mustache back. I'm sorry. I get more compliments on my mustache than I have of any other facial hairstyle that I've ever had in my entire life.
And
are these from men or women?
Both. I was at my wife's doctor, and she opened the door, and before she even got "Hey guys" out of her mouth, she stopped and said, "That is a fantastic mustache. My husband's always wanted to grow one, and he can't do it." She was like, "It looks great."
She was just looking for a mustache.
I'm serious, dude. I have grown men will stop me and go, I don't have the balls to grow a mustache. That looks freaking fantastic.
Okay, I'm just going to say it now. Okay. Does he or does he not look like the George Michael cosplayer from Color Me Plaid?
I don't know if that's
it.
Oh, my God.
He's got the fucking George Michael cosplayer mustache.
We feather his hair a little bit.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Well, he won't grow his hair out long enough to do the full George Michael circa 1980.
Is that supposed to be an insult?
No, absolutely not.
Thank you. So thank you.
We watched Color Me Bad last night. And realized that they had a faux George Michael,
Kenny G. Yeah.
Faux Snow.
Proto Snow. Because Snow wasn't around yet, but he was definitely rocking the look.
Did you say Proto Snow? Before there was an informer.
We were kind of bored last night.
Yeah.
At first I was like, well, these two lonely assholes, and then I was like, wow, I actually wish I was here.
You got me with Proto Sound.
we chimed on that for a bit.
Yeah. So, wow. Hey, Siskoid, remember that guy? He's not from Quebec, by the way. There's R&B here. To me, it all sounds like either rock or pop or jazz. Doesn't feel like its own thing. That's racist. Like, French-Canadian is racist against R&B music. R&B music sounds like R&B music, man.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Rhythm and blues.
Yeah. I don't know if they have rhythm or blues.
No, I think he's trying to say, like, how country now is sort of, it's just an amalgamation.
What are you talking about country? We're talking about R&B.
Because country not country anymore. It's fucking pop music.
That is true.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's what he's saying. It's
family-focused,
like
pop music. Pussified pop music, yeah.
I think that's all he's saying.
But what does that country have to do with R&B?
Fucking asshole. I'm saying it's the same. He's saying the same thing about R&B that you say about country, that it's not country anymore. It's just fucking pop music. He's saying the same thing with the R&B up there.
But R&B still sounds like R&B. I just bought, like, my father. I bought him, like, Frank Ocean. I bought him a bunch of stuff, like Bruno Mars. And none of that shit sounds...
Bruno Mars just makes fucking pop music.
Yeah, well, a little bit R&B, but yeah, it is more poppy. Frank Ocean is more R&B.
So you agree with this? Move on to the next.
Yeah, you guys are bullshit. Okay, fine. It's not a category in French language music anyway. So the French language people do not have R&B. That's too bad. R&B is good sex and music. You would think the French would embrace good sex and music, which was another conversation me and Fixit were having last night without you. That probably was not something I wanted to talk to. Yeah, you probably shouldn't have brought that part up. Siskoid continues. When I say I've been all over Texas, I mean tourist stuff. Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, which he specifically writes as Antone, not Antonio. Corpus Christi, somewhere in El Paso's direction, Waco, to name places I remember. I don't think I've ever been to Corpus Christi. I've been to all those other places.
Corpus is nice. Just take a little vacation.
Yeah. I guess Texas is big enough that people can be regionalists and claim their patch as more Texan than some other patch. You're entitled. Worst Bond theme is Madonna's Die Another Day. Others are less memorable, but that one is complete balls. Die Another Day is pretty terrible.
I don't remember that one.
Die Another Day. We talked about this. This is a repeat.
I don't remember that.
We talked about this. It's all techno-fart bullshit, because what was that dude? Was it Mystical or not Mystical? The guy...
Wait, are you talking about Mystical?
No, this is the dude who was doing...
I don't think I've ever heard that song.
He was doing techno music around the same time, around the 2002 or so. Not Moby, it was some... Like Orbital. Perhaps. Orbital, was it? The dude's name? It's some fucking DJ who did techno-fart deals. Oh, fuck us. Fuck us hard. Thanks, Siskoid. It's actually kind of a cool video, though.
Oh, all right, now he's going to turn around now.
No. This song I remember plenty well enough.
Yeah.
No, this one I'm going to hold to. I know this song well, but I'm saying the video is kind of cool because it's violent.
Wow, you're right. This is fucking horrible.
Wait, yeah. This was the beginning of a James Bond movie.
Yeah, this is the one with the Halle Berry and the Asian dude with the diamonds stuck in his face.
Pierce Brosnan one, right?
Yeah. Might have been the last one, in fact.
So this was her music era, right? Or not?
Yeah, this was... Well, no, she did... This was after music. This was, I think, before she did American Life, which was a fucking terrible album. Like, I think she did Ray of Life, which was sort of a renaissance for her, and then Music was a really good album, and then nothing good since then.
You know what this sounds like? Ketchup.
Yeah.
I honestly don't even fucking speak ill of Kesha by comparing her to this. That's how bad this is. Kesha did a really good cover of.
If you told me this was Kesha, I'd be like, yeah, this sounds exactly like Kesha.
Kesha's even better than this.
She's
even bad Kesha's.
I can't believe they try to pass this off as a James Bond theme song.
Yeah. Well, she did that beautiful Stranger for one of the Austin Powers movies, and that was a better Bond theme than this.
Well, I think every Bond theme, aren't they? They're trying to, they lodge the movie in whatever year it comes out. Like, they want the most cliched sound of the time to be their Bond theme.
But this wasn't even a sound then. No. This was
like a really shitty 90s club music.
This was a thing that somebody thought was going to be a sound, and no, this is 2000s.
Early 2005. I guess what year did this come out?
That's like two, three, somewhere in there.
Really? Was that right?
It's a really horrible song.
Yeah, it's terrible. It was super repetitive.
I would say worse than Chris Cornell.
And also, yeah. Oh, I actually still think Cornell's worse.
No.
Because as bad as this is, at least it kind of feels like a Bond song. No. Cornell just sounded like generic bullshit of about 5 years earlier.
Like generic bullshit 90s club.
Thank you.
That was fucking horrible.
I love that Madonna is such a narcissist that she wants to be both the ultimate Bond heroine and the ultimate Bond villain the same video.
I thought that was her version of the artist battling the chick that stole from everyone else. Greater on it.
Okay, I think you're giving her way too much credit. I think that she wanted to be able to star in a vehicle where she's both the hero and the villain because because she thinks she's that awesome. So then Eternal Rage, who also doesn't listen to us anymore, will comment, "Don't know when I've listened to Nine Inch Nails' full album and liked the whole thing. Pretty hate machine, probably. Downward Spiral was last good Nine Inch Nails album. Damn it, Frank, now you're shitting on House of a Thousand Corpses. Everything else, meh. People like Devil's Rejects for some unknown reason, but House had Dr. Satan. Dude, it's an actual good horror movie. I enjoy Life Force a lot, actually. Hated the original." Hated the original what? "Could not stand listening to the lady..." Oh, okay. He hated the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. "Could not stand listening to the lady scream for 30 minutes straight. I thought that was high comedy. Rooting for Leatherface. I may have to rewatch Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 again, but I remember liking much more than 1. Me too. I may have been too young to appreciate it. 8 or 9. Second viewing, I was older, but couldn't get past screaming. That's the one with Hopper and Mosley. Yes. Yeah, I like terrible movies, and more faults the better with them. Painfully Bad is akin to well received in my like of thinking most times. Check out Chillerama for bad."
Commented.
Yeah. Siskoid wrote of episode 4 on Hateful Eight, who he manages to squeeze 2/8 into that title as one word. "I'm less extreme than Frank, as is proper, but I'm still with him on the absolute blow to the film. You have a character telling another story, then trying to tell it again to other characters who haven't heard it yet. Guess what, Quentin? I have. QT's weakest film, in my opinion, and not nearly as good at creating tension as it thinks it is."
I've kind of forgotten about The Hateful Eight since it came out.
I do that with Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not Django.
No. But I do, it does piss me off, though.
I thought it took a little, some of the hate it took for it was a little...
excessive. Well, there's a lot of social justice warrior action there, too. So, yeah. Where was the Jennifer Jason Leigh renaissance, though? You know? Everybody else in that movie is working steadily, as appearing in stuff as high profile or more so, and then her, fucking nothing. Yeah. I love Jennifer Jason Leigh. Really ticks me off. Because she's a middle-aged woman, so she's not going to get the parts that everybody else is. Where's her fucking The Fate of the Furious role, motherfuckers?
You just social justice warrior Frank that social justice warrior comment into a social justice warrior
point. Yeah. So, Not Guano Man on episode 5 wrote, "I generally endorse Rolled Spine's doings, but The Force Awakens backlash leads to sad face. I've now listened to some good points. Opinion seems to be very much divided on The Force Awakens. I've heard read as much loathing as love. I think the crux of it comes down to whether you buy into the characters. I was immediately sold on Rey, Finn, and Kylo. I was utterly enraged with them as people, so the echoes of A&H, A New Hope didn't bother me much." Oh, yeah. They did the first time, but not the third. I still haven't watched A Force Awakens a second time since the theatrical release.
Bad movie.
Paquita's watched it a fair few times. She actually had a jonesing for watching it. I think she bought it or was like almost rented it before it finally hit cable.
So I was talking to Fitz about this. Never, ever, ever read a review of a Star Wars movie or get an opinion of a Star Wars movie for the first month after it's been out, because it always flips. It's the exact same thing with Force Awakens. I bet it's probably 50-50 on whether or not Force Awakens was any good anymore. All the time I talk to you are like, oh, yeah, it wasn't any good. But when it first reading came out, it was nothing but people just cranking each other over how great that movie was. And we were like the only ones who were like, that movie was no good. And it's completely flipped, just like in the prequels. Now it didn't flip as hard as it flipped.
Yeah, well, it was still better than the prequels.
Because it was way better than the prequels.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't a very good movie. It was a poorly edited, bad action movie.
Yeah.
I think it wasn't good at all. And it's the same way with Rogue One. Rogue One came out and people were throwing it in their top 10 movies of the year lists. And now that's already cooled off now that it's been out for 4 weeks. Okay.
It's made a fuck ton of money, though.
But not as much as I thought, which we talked about this, I think, on a prior podcast, where it's no longer going to be an event film because they're making them every single year now. We talked about it in the instance of the Marvel movies. Well, Avengers 1 was a huge event because
they've never been done before. Yeah.
But now that you're going to come out with an Avengers movie every freaking year.
Well, every couple to three is what they're doing.
It's going to trail off. You're not going to get the instant billion-dollar movies because it's not a big a deal. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be the same with Star Wars movies. You come out with a Star Wars movie every single year instead of once every decade, then yeah, it's going to chill a little bit.
So yeah.
They need to cool their money-making expectations off of it.
Yeah. You're going to make money, but you're going to have to make more movies to make that money because you're going to have a set audience after a while.
So Force Awakens Rogue One's making a lot of money, but it's not making Force Awakens.
Yeah. Well, and again, I saw Force Awakens one time. I have got to go see Rogue One. I do intend to. It's just with the holidays and everything else, I haven't got around to it. We'll probably see it one time, and that's the kind of money they're going to make. They're not not going to make Marvel money where I'm going to see a movie a couple of three times, which was already a weird thing for me. I've tried to dial that back some. But
to cap the point, my point is that when our podcast came out, it was as negative as it was.
Yeah.
At the time, it was sort of every
an outlier. Yeah.
We were a big time outlier. Now, not the case.
Well, and the fact that we were, and also because we were criticizing, you know, legitimate points, not because we're racist and misogynist like a lot of those other critics.
Right. We were like, "Who's a black stolen trooper and a girl doing it?" That was furthest from our
company. Yeah. Because again, it's like I finally got around to seeing Ghostbusters, which was also like a much worse movie than The Force Awakens. Like, it was deeply unfunny.
Wait, how about, when did you watch
it? I watched it on cable.
What'd you think?
And I watched the extended version too.
Okay.
So there's some stuff in there that's like, oh my God, I really wish could I see the cut version now? Except that I have to watch it again, so I don't have to do that. Leslie Jones was the funniest thing in the movie, easily.
Who's that?
She's the black girl.
Okay.
Easily the funniest person in the movie. So the fact that she got so much of the criticism shows that MRAs are fucking cocksuckers. But it still wasn't very good, especially all the cameos. None of those cameos were any damn good. Bill Murray especially was like, oh, I wish this didn't happen. Oh, Bill, you know, you're not helping your legacy any with this shit. But I think the best thing that they did in the entire movie was when Leslie Jones and, help me out, female Kevin James, Sookie from...
Melissa McCarthy.
When they're... Did you see it, by the way? Ghostbusters? So when Leslie Jones and Melissa McCarthy are talking about Kristen Wiig's boyfriend and how he would be in bed and how he'd be dancing and stuff, and they're just kind of riffing on his like sad, pathetic whiteness and shit, that was the funniest thing in that entire movie. And that should have been like a little off the side goof. And instead, I think that was the only time I had genuine sincere laughs through the movie. It was a mediocre action movie. I do think though that, like, and me and your sister were talking about that and kind of standing on that, is the dumbness of Chris Hemsworth's character is in no way unusual for a female character in movies. And I think the very strong reaction is you don't appreciate how many women in movies are treated exactly like Chris Hemsworth was in that movie. That was the whole joke, is they basically took a female character from so many comedies and cast a sexy guy in the role instead. But I didn't have any problems with that. It was just, you know, it just wasn't very funny though. It just didn't, it didn't tell an original enough story, but it wasn't faithful enough to the original movies to where it could even be like just a remake or an homage. It needed to be something new, and it wasn't really new at all. It just, and all those actors have done better work elsewhere. So it just didn't come together. It just didn't work. And trying to will it to work to make a political point isn't reason enough for this thing to exist and to make a bunch of money. But I know there are a lot of girls, little girls especially, that like Ghostbusters. I think Ghostbusters for them is going to be like a Howard the Duck for us, where it's objectively not a good movie, but because it came out at the right time and hit you in the sweet spot, you're going to have love for it. And I'm happy for those little girls. I'm happy that some of those action figures, you know, made some money and all that kind of good stuff, but that doesn't make it a good movie. It may align with my politics. I may have wanted to make a point in seeing that movie, but it wasn't very good.
I thought it was garbage. Okay.
Yeah. I do think you're overly harsh on it. It wasn't like I hated it. It wasn't like they were stabbing me in the eyes while I was watching it. It just wasn't very funny. It didn't deserve to make a ton of money, and it didn't, so, you know, whatever. And it cost too much money, too. They spent so much money on the special effects in that movie and trying to sell it as an action movie. Like, Melissa McCarthy is genuinely trying to do action beats. Like, the bit where they're having her running around and punching the ghosts with their energy gauntlets and shit. It's like, that's not gonna work. And also, by the way, I really like... What's her name? The lesbian chick from Saturday Night Live. She plays Hillary.
He does Hillary
all the time. Yeah.
Really, I find her great.
I like her fine. I like her SNL bits. I really like her as Trump's crony.
Oh, what's his
Kellyanne?
Yeah,
that chick. She's a lot of fun on those. But considering how heavily she was sold by, like, when I would check out like people's like little reviews, and apparently she like was like, a major girl crush.
New Molly Shannon.
There was a Molly Shannon-ness about her. Yes, but considering how women specifically were like thinking she was so super hot and thinking Holtzman was such a sexy character, I wasn't getting it. I'm sure part of it is because I wasn't the intended audience for that, but also I thought that she wasn't very funny. I never thought Kristen Wiig was funny. Sorry guys, I can't be the SGJ on this one.
Okay, keep going.
Oh hey, back to Force Awakens. Oh shit, we were back on Not Guano Man. Okay.
Not Guano replied in this comment.
Ha 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 ha
continue.
There are plot problems, in particular Lightspeed, but the acting, cinematography, and emotional punches really work for me. Depends what media you see. I feel it's taken a somewhat disproportionate battering, which is, at the time I thought was weird because I didn't hear that, but apparently Facebook was savaging the movie at the time. Firesource wrote, Force Awakens, Before the Awakening, gives an explanation why Rey can fly ships, gives an explanation why Finn can use weapons so well. He's a stormtrooper. I thought they just got better training in the modern era of Star Wars, right? All the stormtroopers were more competent in that movie than they had been previously, so I don't really have a problem with that. Charlton Hero wrote, listening to the Star Wars podcast with clenched fists, LOL. So frustrating, it's great. Very much loving the episode, guys. I love The Force Awakens, and I'm enjoying its beatdown. Fun episode. Thank you, sir. I try to keep an open mind, even when somebody's attacking something that I have love for. It's like I try to at least give them the opportunity to explain themselves. Just like, there was another movie, it might have been The Force Awakens, where the guys over at Pulp to Pixel were like talking about how awesome it was. And of course, I've mentioned how the guys at Film and Water were loving the movie as well. And I'm just sitting there going, there's no one here to offer a critical counter opinion. It just drives me nuts. But they weren't bad podcasts. I listened to them both. So
it's called hate listening.
There's a bit element of hate listening there, though. Siskoid, again, wrote episode 5. I knew I could count on you to destroy this movie. I think Frank may suffer from the same thing I do regarding Star Wars. The movie's flaws wouldn't be so irritating if there wasn't a legion of strident apologists spewing venom on anyone who pointed them out.
Wait, for me, is this Siskoid?
This is Siskoid, yes.
I love you.
For me, The Force Awakens was about level with Return of the Jedi, which is damning with faint praise since The Jedi was my second favorite Star Wars film. I've only really ever liked Empire. The Force Awakens' only job was for me was to pass the torch to new characters I wanted to see in future movies. It did that for me, if not for all of you on every count. If it had an original plot, all the better. It didn't. So as with Jedi, I was in and out of the movie. Like the banter and the elements that were remixed enough, and Kylo Ren certainly, and irritated or bored by the elements that were exactly like those of A New Hope. I can't get outraged too much because I don't really care about the franchise enough. That's true. I still found a lot to like, including how it allowed a lot of scenes to play without dialogue, the sense of fun it had, etc. Is the killer planet really unable to move? I ask because each recharge drains a sun. How many suns does it have access to? Is it just a one-shot weapon which must then be abandoned? Why bother destroying it once it's acted then? And if it can be moved, why bother destroying planets? Just suck out their suns and watch them die. Not well thought through at all. As for why Rey was so powerful with the Force so quickly, the clue's in the title. I think Kylo created his own worst enemy by trying to push her mentally, unlocking her powers, and a sense of how to use them, aka you're no prize in this movie, Siskoid. I think possibly it also has to do with the psychic feedback from touching the lightsaber. Could it have been imprinted with a secret message and abilities payload? The Matrix, I know Kung Fu. That isn't addressed.
In French, or what's wrong?
I know, right?
You're right.
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi? C'est quoi?
Sorry, Frank just had a stroke. All right, and we'll give him some bear. All right, go.
That it isn't addressed in the confines of this film is a weakness. Even if Luke explains it at the top of the next one, I agree. But it didn't bug me because Kylo's push was the demarcation point, and while ambiguous, made sense to me. Ryan Count Dracula Daily wrote an episode.
Wait, let me just say something. When Siskoid and Ryan, you're included in this too, and you guys inevitably get kicked out of the Fire and Water podcast for being lazy assholes, because it's going to happen. You guys are welcome to join our shitbox podcast network. Anytime you want to join the shitbox world's fine, Hot or Not, we'll fucking rename it. We don't even care. We'll rename it the Hot or Not Secret Origin Network. We don't even care.
Secret Origins doesn't exist as a podcast anymore, I should point out.
It doesn't matter because these comments don't. These are comments fucking a year and a half old. Okay.
True that, yeah. Speaking of Ryan Count Dracula Daily, he wrote hilarious usage of Rule of Threes. Ilmax saying, shout out to Count Dracula when you mentioned me, then shout out to somebody else, finally culminating with shout out to Mace Windu as if the fictional character.
Yeah, shout out Mace Windu.
Apparently you did. It's been a long time. As if the fictional character is a friend of the show, Sam Jackson, Wild Agent of Marvel. If only.
I could do a hilariously offensive impersonation of Samuel L. Jackson that we could easily do a 2-hour podcast.
I'm sick of these motherfucking crackers on this motherfucking podcast.
Well, as a matter of fact, for one of our promos, you did a hilariously offensive impersonation. Holy shit, we already did this!
Yes, we've been there. Oh, and I haven't even done the Asian one yet. Oh boy, I'm going to be in trouble for that. Nightblade. Okay. So David Fiore, we already did. Okay. So finally, we're going to end with Siskoid on episode 6. Obviously, this was taped before our conversation on Wild Agents. I didn't realize I used Siskoid in an episode of World Spine. That's how long it's been. So the stuff about my accent, priceless. If I am asked to voice Annihilus, I've got it made. Shame about the Fantastic Four movie franchise. Is this gonna, is that going to be a complete episode? I guess it is, huh?
Yeah.
That was long. Yeah.
Why are we answering questions from like...
Because that's how long it's been since we've done one of these podcasts, man.
Another reason why joining the stream, we can then kind of talk about...
No. We're not going to actually intermarry the shows to one another, right? The group shit's going to be on one stream. That's all it is. Yeah. There's still going to be a World Spine show isolated from the other shows.
How does it feel to treat me like you do?